Kutastadipurusho Bhagavam Sri Adisha Yan Bhutya Vistitim Akanditaya Svadristya Drasta Sita Vadimako Vatirikta Ase Nitya, eternally, Mukta, liberated, Parishuddha, uncontaminated, Vibhudha, full of knowledge, Atma, the Supreme Soul, Kutastha, changeless, Adi, original, Purusha, person, Bhagavan, the Lord filled with six opulences. Triadisha, master of the three modes. Yat, whence? Budhi, of intellectual activities. Avistitim, all stages. Akanditaya, unbroken. Tadristya, by transcendental vision. Rasta, you witness. Stito, for maintaining the universe. Adnimaka, enjoy of the results of all sacrifices. Vyatirikta, differently. Ase, you are situated. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, by your unbroken transcendental glance, you are the supreme witness of all stages of intellectual activities. You are eternally liberated. Your existence is situated in pure goodness, and you are existent in this supersoul without change. You are the original personality of Godhead, full of six opulences, and you are eternally the master of the three modes of material nature. Thus, you are always different from the ordinary living entities. As Lord Vishnu, you maintain all the affairs of the entire universe, and yet you stand aloof and are the enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. An atheistic argument against the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of God, it states that if God, the Supreme Person, appears and disappears and sleeps and awakens, then what is the difference between God and the living entities? Jiva Maharaj is carefully distinguishing the existence of the Supreme Personality of God from that of the living entities. He points out the following differences. The Lord is eternally liberated. Whenever he appears, even within this material world, he is never entangled by the three modes of material nature. He is known therefore as Triadish, the master of the three modes of material nature. In Bhagavad Gita 7.14, it is said, Dadihi Esha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya. The living entities are all entangled in the three modes of material nature. The external energy of the Lord is very strong, but the Lord, as the master of the three modes of material nature, is ever liberated from the action and reaction of those modes. He therefore is uncontaminated, as stated in the Ishopanishad. The contamination of the material world does not affect the Supreme Godhead. Krishna therefore says in the Bhagavad Gita that those who are rascals and fools think of him as an ordinary human being, not knowing his parambhavam. Parambhavam refers to his being always transcendentally situated. Material contamination cannot affect him. Another difference between the Lord and the living entity is that a living entity is always in darkness. Even though he may be situated in the mode of goodness, there are still so many things which are unknown to him. But it is not the same for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows past, present, and future, and everything that is happening in everyone's heart. Bhagavad Gita confirms this. Vedaham samachitani. The Lord is not part of the soul. He is the unchangeable Supreme Soul, and the living entities are his parts and parcels. The living entity is forced to appear in this material world under the direction of Daivamaya, but when the Lord appears, he comes by his own internal potency, Atmamaya. Besides that, a living entity is within the time of past, present, and future. His life has a beginning, a birth, and in the conditioned state his life ends with death. But the Lord is Adi Purush, the original person. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma offers his respect to the Adi Purush Govinda, the original person, who has no beginning, whereas the creation of this material world has a beginning. Devadanta says, Janmadyasya Yata. Everything is born from the Supreme, but the Supreme has no birth. He has all the six opulences in full and beyond comparison. He is the master of material nature. His intelligence is not broken under any circumstances, and he stands aloof, although he is the maintainer of the whole creation. As stated in the Vedas, Katha Upanishad 2.2.13, Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam, the Lord is the supreme maintainer. The Lord is the supreme maintainer. Living entities are meant to serve him by offering sacrifices, for he is the rightful enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. Everyone therefore should engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord with his life, his riches, his intelligence, and his words. This is the original constitutional position of the living entities. One should never compare the sleeping of an ordinary living entity to the sleeping of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the causal ocean. There is no stage at which the living entity can compare to the Supreme Person. The Mayavadi philosophers, being unable to adjust to all this, come to the conclusion of impersonalism or voidism. Om Jnana Tilandasya Jnanjana Shlakaya Chakshuminitanyana Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Mukam Guru Tivachalam Pangum Langaite Girim Yakipata Mahavan Veshi Gurundinatarinam. Panchakalpa Tribhyascha Kripasindriya Evacha Patitanam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Siva Sadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. And most of you might have been hoping to hear Srila Gopalprabhu, but you're stuck with me, so forgive me. I'll try my best. So Dhruva Maharaj is still on his journey. He's about to return home after spending time chasing the Lord, as his mother had suggested that if he would like to try to get to Vishnu, you have to go to the forest like all the yogis do. In Vedic times, it was understandable, and it was common knowledge that the yogis would go to the forest and perform penances and austerities, whether they're meditating on the super soul within, that they go to the forest and attain this higher perfection. But amidst all that was happening, Dhruva Maharaj, of course, came across Narada Muni, who instructed him particularly to repeat a certain mantra. And as Dhruva Maharaj performed his penances and austerities, the Lord was revealed within his heart. And as his meditation broke, the Lord appeared in front of him. In this state, Dhruva Maharaj was, of course, struck with the beauty of the Lord. And wanting to compose beautiful prayers, Dhruva Maharaj was actually not able to do so. So the Lord, within the heart of all living entities, was able to detect this desire by Dhruva Maharaj, and he therefore blessed Dhruva to be able to compose such beautiful prayers. And part of these prayers is what we are reading at the moment. So these are prayers that Dhruva Maharaj is offering to the Lord in praise of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now the gist of this purport, as we're hearing, and the translation, is that the Lord is always different from the ordinary living entities. So if we try to analyze the difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities, there are numerous verses that state this difference. So we'll pick on a few and we'll discuss it further. So Srila Prabhupada in the purport starts speaking about how the Lord is eternally liberated, that at no stage, no point in the pastime of the Supreme Lord is the Lord condemned or contaminated by the three modes of material nature. We know that at the time of creation, of course, all the material elements as they grow from subtle to gross, including the little entities, time, the females, material nature, etc., these are all covered by ignorance. Being in this material world means that we're in a state of ignorance. We are given a material body by Mother Nature, and due to our karma, we get a particular type of body. So we get thrusted into the womb of material nature with a particular body so that we can come and exhaust our karmic activities with the hope of actually achieving at some point understanding of our eternal constitutional position. So we go through all these different stages of, you know, accruing our sinful activities, performing our sinful acts, creating our unmanifested sinful reactions that will take place at a later date, and continuing this cycle of ignorance. It's nicely explained in the Nectar of Devotion how the cause of our being in this material world is the ignorance and the sinful activities that we perform over and over again bind us to a life of material misery. So the Supreme Lord, when He descends, of course, He does so by His own will, by His own higher potency, His Atma Maya, as it's mentioned in this verse. Whereas when we descend, if we correlate the activities of our birth into this material world, it is extremely different from the Supreme Lord. We are thrusted into a bag with no air and no light. For months, we are in this deranged situation where we go in and out of consciousness, and this is according to Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, modern science tries to explain it as, oh, the child now starts to move at this month, these organs are developing, and at this point in time can hear the child start to move in the womb, etc. There are all these explanations given. But we understand, even from the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the living entity in the womb, because of the disastrous situation of being in this heat-infested environment, the living entity goes in and out of consciousness because it is not a nice place to live in for 9 months. No matter how much glorification is made about the process of being in the womb, according to modern day, you know, stuff out there, it is a very pitiful situation. That is how we come into this world. We are in a bag with no air, no light. At a certain point, to help our organs function, we eat what is inside, we release it, and then we eat what we have released. And that's not a great way to think about how we are growing inside. It is explained, even modern science says the child, well, the unborn in the womb, is drinking towards the end, is drinking the amniotic fluid to help with the lungs, with the breathing. It is drinking it and it releases it. And even after releasing, it keeps on doing that for quite a long time. So when the living entity, you and I have been through this, by the way, we have all been through this. So we come out, we get pushed out. We do not choose when we come out. Nature has chosen. Material nature chooses when we come out. We have 10 different types of air circulating in the body through the nadis, through the channels. We get pushed out by these airs through a very narrow birth canal where our skull has to shift. You see, newborn children have interesting heads. Right? And that is for the mere fact that they are able to come through the birth canal. So because everything is still soft, the head, these bones that are here, they have to collapse and fall in so the head can come and everything else. So this is how we appear. We are thrust. Next thing, there's lights, camera, action. Network of fantasies. But we are hearing things we've never heard before. We don't even see properly. For a long time, actually, the living entity at that state cannot see color. You see black and white. We cannot see, we can smell. And that is how the child is able to smell the parents. The child is able to smell where the milk is. That's why they will crawl towards the region of the milk. Nature has already designed things in a certain way. If we have a look at Krishna's transcendental position, as he explained that I descend in my original transcendental form. And those who do not know me are baffled by this. Here we're hearing about Krishna's tattva, really, who he is in terms of the units, his majesty. He is the Adipurush. He is the origin, the cause of all causes, even the first being created, Lord Brahma. Before he starts his glorification, he states the fact, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadi Arya Govinda Savakarna Karna. He states, who is that Adipurush, the original male? It's Krishna, the enjoyer of everything, the cause of all causes, the person who is there even before creation begins, and that is Krishna. So these facts have been stated, and Krishna, when he's speaking to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, is explaining to Arjuna that I have taken many, many births. You and I have taken many, many births. I can remember all of them, but you cannot. This is a stopping difference. He's giving evidence. I have lived before, and I'm with all the knowledge. I have explained this knowledge to the sun god, who has explained it to his son. Now I'm explaining it to you. And this is how things work. This is a chain of disciplic succession. Krishna explains his descent into this material world. A famous verse that is known to many people from the Indian continent. As soon as you say, Krishna descends into this material universe, what is the verse that is normally quoted? Maybe some of you even knew it before becoming devotees. In many songs and movies, Paritranaya Sarunam Vinashaya Chadushitam Dharmasam Sapanapayam Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. Krishna explains that I come millennium after millennium to re-establish religion, to perform wonderful pastimes for my devotees and entice them through loving service, and to kill off the miscreants, those who defame my position as the Supreme Being. So Krishna has explained, this is how I descend millennium after millennium. I come in my original transcendental form. Even if Krishna chooses to come as Varaha, even when the Supreme Lord is coming out of a nostril, even when the Supreme Lord is coming as Lord Boar, he's decked out. Where have you ever seen a boar? In India or anywhere. Coming out all decorated, attractive. Boars are not really that attractive. Back home in Botswana we have wild boars, they're called warthogs. I don't know if you've ever seen a warthog. It looks like a combination between a pig and a small rhinoceros. It is very ugly, it's not beautiful. So can you imagine, the Lord comes as a boar, and it is an attractive boar with weapons in hand, adorned with jewels. And this is Krishna's appearance. When Krishna appeared in the jail cell, it is explained just the effulgence of his mother, the effulgence of Devaki, that is what gave Kamsa fear. Because there were so many, what we call them, omens. When Krishna was about to be born, nature was moving backwards. Right, the flowers were opening at the night time. The seasons were changing. Everything was so jubilant. Devaki's body was so effulgent. There were rumblings up in the skies. There were visitors by extraterrestrial beings, not the ones that we see in Hollywood movies with the big eyes and the big head and the weird smell and whatever. That is just Hollywood. But extraterrestrial beings of a higher nature, the devatas, whose beauty cannot even be fathomed by Hollywood. by Hollywood at this point. So there were extraterrestrial beings coming to see where the Lord is going to appear, bringing gifts, coming to have darshan of the Lord even while he was still in his womb. This is what happens when the Supreme Lord is about to descend, or when the Supreme Lord's pastimes are going on. His birth in itself attracts inter-universal affairs, not even intercontinental, but people from different universes are coming to see the Supreme Lord with gifts. They come in disguise. It is such a beautiful thing to try to understand that this is Krishna, the all-attractive Supreme Lord. He's appearing in his original transcendental Satchit Ananda form, attracting all living entities, attracting the plant life, attracting the seasons, attracting the directions. Favorable breezes were going out. Flowers were blooming at night. But everything was in preparation to receive the Supreme Lord into the material world. He is untouched by the three modes of material nature, even the mode of goodness. It is still binding. The Supreme Lord is untouched. So this is what happens when the Supreme Lord is descending. I've already explained what happens when we descend. There's a startling difference. The Lord is always in a liberated state. He explains very clearly his parambhavam situation, his transcendentally situated in his atmamaya potency. Whereas as a living entity, we are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Yes, we are. We are eternally his parts and parcels, but because of our free will, we forget. And we choose to descend to this material world and try to enjoy separately from Krishna. And for that, we have to take on a material body, because to enjoy separately from Krishna, you have to be in forgetfulness of Krishna. And the material body, which is kind of like a lump of ignorance, helps us forget Krishna. So you get a material body which is full of forgetfulness, which is full of ignorance, and in that way we think that we can come here and enjoy and be happy. But we are filled with so many conditioned states of being. Whereas when Krishna comes, even though he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna never aged beyond 16 years of living. Krishna had grandchildren and great-grandchildren on the field, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. I've yet to meet a youthful grandfather or great-grandfather. But Krishna, showing that this is my body which is spiritual, it never changes. I'm never contaminated. Therefore, I'm going to be Parthasarathi. I'm going to be Arjuna's charioteer with my transcendental body, which has aged accordingly to that of a grandfather, although I still look youthful. I still look no older than a 16-year-old. This is Krishna's body. This is Krishna's supremacy. So we get contaminated by so many things. Our gender contaminates our consciousness. We think, I am man, I am woman. I am changing my gender. I am now a woman, I was born a man. I'm now a man, I was born a woman. Or whatever the case may be. Now there's so many things to further contaminate us. Whether it's gender or sexual orientation. This is the new term. Sexual orientation. Doesn't matter what you were born. What is your sexual orientation? That further complicates the matter. Binding us. The modes of material nature are also explained to be gunas or ropes. You cannot untie yourself if you're bound. Only someone who's untied, who's not tied, can actually release those ropes. So our gender, our sexual orientation, our ethnicity, our race, our culture, these things, these temporary occupations that we have taken up can bind us to this material world. Whereas Krishna, it's very difficult to pinpoint Krishna, which Vana are you from, what race are you, you're bluish, black, what, which box do you tick, right? Are you Indian, are you black, are you mixed, are you... Krishna has his own box. There is only one Krishna. Ekale Ishvara Krishna, Arasadhya Bhritya. Everyone else is a servant. There's only one enjoyer, one Purushan, that is Krishna. So we get conditioned by so many things in this world, but Krishna never gets conditioned because all these things are a creation of the contaminated mind. How can intelligent people think that your greatness lies in the color of your skin? Greatness lies in your gender. Greatness lies in your ethnicity. Greatness lies in your culture. These things which are referred to as being a patriot of your country, they bind you to a material understanding of who you are. You are the body, and that's all you'll ever be. So these days, there's a lot in the news about that type of stuff. People are not being educated about things that are beyond the body. It is always on the bodily platform. If you look at things that are trending, I'm learning all these new words these days. Whatever's trending these days is associated with body and the mind and the senses. So the topic may be of discrimination against the body. Oh, how could this be done? Oh, I'm black and I'm proud. Oh, I'm a white supremacist. I'm that. I'm not condoning ignorant behavior, by the way, disclaimer. I'm not saying that persons who behave by judging people externally can get a pass. I'm just saying you are what you hear. If all we hear is just strife between this body or this gender, this ethnicity, then that's all we're going to have discussions about. That's all that's going to pervade our consciousness, and it's very limiting. It does not lead to growth. It does not lead to anything higher than bodily sense gratification. Krishna is not bothered by these things, as Krishna never forgets that he's God. The post is never free. It's not a state, it's not a point of, okay, the annual general elections are coming up. Krishna is running for president. And Narendra Modi is running for vice president, or vice god, or whatever. There are no such things, because Krishna will always be Krishna. Krishna will always, his tattva will always be the Adi Purush. He's the supreme person, and it never changes. Where lots of people get it wrong, and as we'll hear in the next purport, is that sometimes you have jnana mishra bhaktas, or those whose devotion is mixed with jnana. They are empiric philosophers, and philosophically they can appreciate Krishna, but when it comes to Krishna's rasa and how he behaves in relation to his devotees, it's difficult to accept him as Bhagavan based on that. So we're hearing about, you know, Gabodakashaya Vishnu, how the Purusha is expanding in so many amsas and divinamsas and expanding into different universes and the different incarnations that come, etc. That is very enticing to those who are into empiric philosophy. But as soon as you mention Krishna sitting by the banks of the Yamuna with the gopis, or Krishna eating with his left hand as a cowherd boy, being tricked by Lord Brahma, or being summoned by Lord Indra, it becomes a little bit trippy for them to understand, how is then this person Bhagavan? He's being controlled by some cowherd girls. It makes no sense. Even coming from the Christian background, when you think of God, you think of stern, serious, old man. He's not playing around. He's not playing piggyback with his... He has no friends. He is God. God has friends. God has boyfriends. God has lady friends. God has parents. It's very confusing. And then when you come and say, this is Krishna's rasa, these are Krishna's rasas. He has five primary rasas. You know, there's Vatsalya, there's Madhurya, there's Shanta, there's Sat. There are five primary rasas and there are other rasas. It's very difficult for someone who's into empiric philosophy to ascertain that there's this Adi Purush who was there before even Lord Brahma's creation, who enters into every atom, who enters into every heart of living entity, into different universes, is also a young boy who is stealing butter. So because there's that difficulty in linking that this is one person who has innumerous ways of dealing with his energies, it's hard for them to fully accept Krishna as Bhagavan. Therefore, they only partially accept him. And that is why in the next verse, we'll see that Prahlad Maharaj will mention such persons, offer them respect because at least they're accepting a partial representation of Krishna in his Brahman effulgence. They're accepting that. Yet, they're not at a point where they can fully accept Bhagavan, but they're partially accepting him. And we might meet many people around the world who are like that. They love the supremacy of the Supreme Lord, the Divine, whomever they may call. But when it comes to actual personal dealings, relationships, this God can have relationships, you can talk to him, you can have pastimes, it's very difficult to ascertain. Therefore, at best, they accept the all-pervasiveness, the energy of the Lord. But a form of the Lord they cannot accept. It's very, very difficult. But Krishna is very kind because it is by the process of devotional service that we're able to understand that, yes, the Supreme Being has many roles. He's through his potency, through his Atma Maya, and through his Mahamaya, the material universe is carrying on, yet he is in his spiritual domain, not touched by any of these workings of the material world. He always remains aloof. Therefore, we have specific and particular names given to Krishna to help us understand how he eternally stays separate from the material energy. So in this word, the word used is Tri-Adish, and it is translated as Master of the Three Modes. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explained as Nirguna. He's above the mode. Although impersonalists see it as without qualities, therefore they say, you see, there you go. The Supreme Being is not a person, he is without quality. But we understand it to mean he is near, without, he is not confronted or affected by the gunas, the three modes of material nature. So this is a very startling difference between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. That we are conditioned because we misuse our free will, whereas the Supreme Lord is eternally liberated in every state of being, whether it's his creation, in his rasas with his devotees, he's always eternally liberated. And when he does descend to this material world, he does so out of his Atma Maya potency, which is his own internal pleasure potency. And he says this to Arjuna strictly. So because of that, the Lord's appearance is very peculiar to the many people out there. And the second point that is explained is that the Lord, the living entities are always in darkness. Well, darkness doesn't mean there's no lights on. Darkness means we are not in knowledge of who we are, of what our identity is. We're always trying to figure out, who am I? I don't know, but some of us went through that phase when we were growing up in university or high school. You're trying to find yourself. So you travel a lot. Many of us have traveled. You're going all over the world to try and figure out who you are. Because you don't feel quite right in this body. Oh, I'm from Colombia, I'm from Peru, I'm from South Africa, I'm from Botswana. What am I? Who am I? I want to be, I want to exist. There's a lot of ignorance about how we got here, who we are, what are we doing in this material world. So there's a lot of ignorance that is perpetuated out there. And sometimes it is difficult to find an avenue to ask these type of questions. Who am I? Why am I here? Best is we watch a movie that touches on these things. That's when you think, wow, now I'm really spiritual. Because I watched this movie and was talking about out-of-body experiences and near death, and I felt myself separate from my body. And man, it was so high out there in the universe. The universe is talking to me. At best, that's what happens. Right? We start thinking, yeah, I tapped into this energy, man. At the same time, you're smoking pot. Sorry, pot is marijuana or any type of herb. So this is when you think you're being very spiritual into trying to understand your ignorant state of being. You smoke a herb to try and heighten your experience, and it leads nowhere. We are not just tree huggers. Walking around barefoot or wearing white doesn't necessarily make you spiritual. So this ignorance that we're put in, it's, Krishna explains it. We see when the Lord is approaching, when the Lord appears in front of Dhruva Maharaj, and Dhruva Maharaj does not quite know how to articulate the experience that he has got, how to understand himself and Krishna. He was asking for broken pieces of glass, and now here's the Supreme Lord, the cause of everything, standing in front of him. You know, everything just vanishes. So the Supreme Lord appeared to Dhruva Maharaj in that state, and Dhruva Maharaj got blessed to compose prayers to explain the glories of the Lord. So being in darkness here means we are not in knowledge of reality, who we are in relation to this world, in relation to this universe, in relation to the controller. So this ignorant state leads us to behave in interesting ways. When one does not know, they say ignorance is bliss. I don't know if you've ever experienced bliss from not knowing what's outside the door when you're in the dark, not, and something is, if you can imagine being thrown into a cage with other living beings and you don't know what those living beings are, you don't know where you are, you don't know what they look like, you don't know if they're carnivores, herbivores. You don't want to know because ignorance is bliss. It makes no sense. You'd be terrified of not knowing. So not having the proper knowledge of who we are and how we got here, this is us being in darkness. Krishna never, he's never confused about where he's at or who he is. Millennium after millennium, Krishna knows who he is. That's one of the major differences, that we chose to be in darkness because we desired separately. So this darkness comes in many forms. This lack of knowledge is covered over and over again by the lifestyles that we live, by the things, the acts that we perform, whether through intoxication or reading certain types of books that really do not heighten our human experience, or whatever it is, they do not lead to knowledge. I was speaking to a friend the other day who I met 8 years ago, who used to come to my yoga classes, and I said to this person, can you imagine if alcohol was removed from society? No Liquorland, no Dan Murphy's, nothing. No alcohol, no cigarettes, no pot, no acid, no, what's this one, no ice. Just water and normal food. Do you think people would function? And he thought for like 10 seconds, I never thought of it like this, but what would we do? Like, I don't do these things, I'm asking you. Says, yeah, how are you going to deal with your mind, with yourself? Said, well, I'll have a lot of time to question and think. And I said, well, there you go. All these things are distractions to you asking yourself questions, and that's what the human form of life is about. You can actually inquire into higher subject matter. You have that ability. But the life that we're living right now, the world that we're living right now, is not trying to enhance your thinking capacity. It's not trying to get you out of darkness and into the light. It's trying to keep you in darkness. And that's why sometimes we say it's a war on Maya, because it is. You're fighting to get out of darkness because the way society is structured in general, I'm not saying everybody, the way things are structured is that you are put into it, you're put in darkness, you're put in ignorance, and what's around us does not really help us get out of that darkness, but it further puts us into darkness. The foods that we eat, the literatures that we're reading, the music that we listen to, very, very ignorant. Puts us even further on the bodily concept of life. And if we look at the cycle, why we're in a distressed situation, what are the causes of distress according to the Nectar of Devotion? What causes distress? Of course, at the root cause, it's ignorance, avidya. When you're not in knowledge of something, you are in a distress situation. We do not know who we are, how we got here, where we're going. Avidya is always the root cause, and our material desires, our ever-expanding, ever-growing material desires, cause distress because we do not always get our material desires fulfilled. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but I surely have. Material desires are always raging and burning like a furnace. They will never be completely satisfied. They have a beginning, middle, and end phase of that satisfaction. And oftentimes, the satisfaction is higher before you even get your material desire. At the contemplating level, you derive more satisfaction while you're contemplating your material desire. That when you do get that material desire in front of you, it's not as exciting as you thought it would be. Or it's not as fulfilling as you thought it would be. And therefore, you move on to the next thing. You chase another desire, or this time, it is going to yield a greater satisfaction. And the same thing happens over and over again. And that is why material desires are never fully satisfied, because there is no end. There's a beginning, there's a middle, there's an end to the satisfaction. So material desires, the more we feed them, the more they grow, and the more they keep us in a distressed state. And they cause us to perform sinful activities that are not in conjunction with proper human civilization's behavior. So our ignorance leads us to having greater material desires, which leads us into having and performing sinful activities. This is the cause of distress. Krishna doesn't go through this cycle. Krishna doesn't go through the cycle of repeated birth and death, because he always appears in his original transcendental form, Satchidananda Vigraha. And that is a major difference between Krishna and the conditioned soul. We go through the cycle of samsara. Krishna doesn't go through the cycle of samsara. He makes it very clear to Arjuna. So this is a good way of understanding that, yes, at this point, Dhruva Maharaj is explaining Krishna's independence, is explaining our dependence on Krishna's energy, even for our forgetfulness. However, to get out of this state of being in forgetfulness, when we practice any of the items of devotional service, our ignorance will slowly become dissipated, because then we start understanding the difference between the body, the mind, and the soul. And we understand where we are situated, that we're parts and parcels of Krishna. And the more we learn about Krishna, the more we perform service to Krishna, any kind of service to Krishna, will be more in realization of that relationship with Krishna and will be further pulled away from the darkness and into the light. And that is what we want. We want to come out of the cycle of birth and death and be reinstated as Krishna's parts and parcels, always serving Krishna. Not just to come out of the cycle and be happy. That's not the goal of life. The goal of life is not to go to Brahmaloka, go to one of these heavenly planets. That's not the goal. The goal of life is to be reinstated as dependents of Krishna, servants of Krishna. That's what we're getting to. So we can only do this if we really understand who the Purusha is, who is the supreme in joy, and what our relationship to that person is. If we don't understand it, then it's difficult to dedicate your life to something that you don't know or something that you don't accept, a fact that we don't accept. So the good thing about, the amazing thing about what Dhruva Maharaj is doing is stating the facts based on tattva. This is Krishna, he is Param Brahman, he is the Adi Purush, and this is his relationship to the material energy. He's never touched by it. He's always aloof. He's never influenced by the material energy, whereas his parts and parcels, the living entities, do. But the minute we recognize that and the minute we try to engage in loving service to Krishna, we move more towards Krishna and away from the external energy. So this is the information that we are being given by Dhruva Maharaj, and hopefully by further hearing his prayers, our faith in Krishna's position as the supreme being, as the original enjoyer, and as our main shelter, it becomes clear to us what our actions should be. So we should be indebted to Dhruva Maharaj for giving us the, as they say, the cold hard facts. In this case, the sweet fact that we're servants of such a wonderful person, such a majestic, such a decorated person in quality and in purpose. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there are any comments or questions based on what we discussed.
Adi Mahko, do you want to explain to us Adi Mahko, that word, the last line? Adi Mahko.
Enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. Bhuktaram Yagyatapasam Savaloka Maheshwaram. Even in that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains who the benefactor, who the enjoyer of all the results of Yajna should be. And that is him. Even in Yajnas, we have the fire of the Yajna is sometimes explained as the mouth of Vishnu. So of whatever we're throwing in, we're offering to Vishnu. All sacrifices are meant for his pleasure. So whether even when we're doing these so-called kamakanda, yagyas, etc., people do out there, still the first offering, the glorification goes to Vishnu. And we understand that Vishnu is the supreme. Vishnu is not just a devata. So this Adi Mukha, enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. All sacrifices, whether it's a Sankirtan Yajna or whatever sacrifice it is, it should be geared towards Krishna. He's the result because, in actual fact, he's the bestower of the results of those sacrifices. Even Lord Shiva, later on in the Bhagavatam, when we speak about mysticism, the different types of yogis, the anima, lahima, prakti siddhis, Srila Prabhupada is explaining, and there are texts that explain that all these siddhis, actually the benefits, the yogis are not getting it from Lord Shiva, but actually these benedictions are coming from Krishna through Lord Shiva. So even for these material feet, we can say this material manipulation of matter in its gross and subtle form, or what we call these cities, these are being given by the Supreme Lord through the agency of certain devatas. So all our sacrifices actually are meant to please Krishna, because he is Sarvaloka Maheshwaram.
And you are saying that Krishna is beyond the birth, death,
old age and disease? Well, Krishna didn't really discard his material body, because Krishna has no material body. As I mentioned, there is, to date, there's still no one who can say they haven't aged beyond 16 and still be a grandfather and great-grandfather, etc. So when Krishna was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and even long after that, when he was traveling with the Pandavas or in the association of the Pandavas, Krishna left externally, he left this material world appearing to have shed a body. But when Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita is that in every millennium that he appears, whichever yuga it is, that he does so by his Atmamaya energy, by his spiritual potency. So even his body is not material, it is completely spiritual. So Krishna disappears from the vision, just like sometimes it seems like the sun has disappeared from our vision. So Krishna disappears and he goes back to his eternal abode. He doesn't die, there's no funeral. His body wasn't burned at the funeral pyre. Understanding where Krishna's lineage was coming from, you know, in Vedic times there's a funeral pyre, the body is burned, etc. Krishna's disappearance was not like that. Krishna disappeared at his own independent will, and there was no material body.
So then if you compare with the non-duality principle and bhakti yoga, so look at the non-duality principle that we are saying there is a experience that we have four states, turiya. One is the awakened state, another is the dream, third one sleeping state, and fourth one, what we are talking about, is beyond that. So who is experiencing everything, all those fourth states, all three states. So if you compare with this non-duality principle, where there is always somebody experiencing, and the oneness that we are talking about, Krishna is the oneness, isn't it? Even this ground has some, this cement has some extinction properties. So this, all this material or the physical phenomena, that can be represented by this fourth state of our, this universe. So do you mean that Krishna is that one?
The fourth state?
Yeah.
What do you mean the fourth state?
That is the experience of, that experiencing all the changes going through, that we are going through.
Well, in this stage, we can say, in the time of creation, Krishna explains how he enters into every universe, also into every atom, in his different potency as Paramatma. So that is there.
So this Paramatma is the fourth state, and if you say that we are all container, right? And we are floating in the ocean of
misery.
The ocean of
material existence.
Yes. Is that right? Yeah. So we are the, like the pot. So we are forming this body like a pot. But as we are living in the air, so this consciousness or experience of this, this consciousness, so is this represented by Krishna?
Well, one thing to note is that we are eternally, we're eternal individuals. We never merge to become one with Krishna. So even the Supreme Consciousness, even at an impersonal state, when we want to merge with the Supreme, it is, we don't really merge and lose our individuality. So the living entity, even when he attains the impersonal realization, Srila Prabhupada often gives the example of a bird merging into a tree. It can become, externally looks like the bird has become a tree, but it just takes on similar qualities. But the tree always is an individual, and the bird is always individual. So even while we're in this material world, going through different states of being awake, being in a dream state, whether it's a daydream or a night dream, we are always individuals in that state, and Krishna is always supremely individual, separate from us. So our experience will always be different to Krishna, because our experience sometimes leads us into forgetfulness, whereas Krishna is never in forgetfulness of who He is. So we are always separate. Even in terms of consciousness, we never become one with Krishna. We are always separate.
We are separate when we have the knowledge that you explain, is it?
We're always separate even when we're in knowledge.
When you are in knowledge and we are in the state of that knowledge that we are part
we're
of
still separate.
I don't agree with you.
You don't have to agree with me, that's Bhagavatam, that's not me.
Because
we're always... Can I finish my point? Can I finish my point? Why I say it's not my word, but it is Krishna's word. When Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that many births you and I have taken, I can remember all of them, whereas you can't. And further on, Krishna explains that his living entities are his parts and parcels, and due to struggling very hard with the material energy, they have forgotten. Further on, he explains that once you are in remembrance of me by offering prayers unto me, by worshipping me, you will come to me without fail. That's an example of individuality on the highest platform. Even Lord Brahma explains that what happens when he had darshan of Lord, mind you, Lord Brahma is the first created being. He speaks of individuality even between Krishna, between Lord Shiva, even between many demigods. And now demigods are even more advanced than us normal human beings. Even at the state of demigod, you're always separate to Krishna. Even if you attain Salokya or Sarupya Mukti, which is being on the same planet or having the same form of the Lord or a similar form, still you maintain your individuality. You never become one with God. You can try, but it's not an eternal state. Hence the yogis try and meditate for years, but they also fall down according to the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it is not the nature of the living entity. The living entity is by nature active. It's not inactive. And therefore, that's why there's always individuality, even on the highest platform.
Just I'm giving an example. Take an apple. Or take an wood apple. Is that right?
An apple?
Yeah. So take the universe. So if you have a wood apple, what do you have? We have the very thick cover, very hard cover.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the essence inside, we have the seeds, we have the saps. But if you go into the very basic, it is the same entity in different forms, is that? It is the same entity, it comes from the same small entity that exploded into this form.
Simultaneously one and different. Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva. This is the philosophy of Bhagavatam. So just as milk is yogurt, yogurt is not milk. They come from the same form, but they are distinct. Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva.
Just look at the onion. If you look at the onion,
it's the same thing. Achincha Bheda Bheda.
You come to the same entity, which is the cause of all this. Is that?
Yeah, but it is.
How do you say it is different than the actual cause?
Are you me?
If you think that way, I am you. Yeah.
But I'm not thinking, it's a fact.
You have the knowledge that I am you.
Well, I have the knowledge that I'm not.
Okay. They're different.
Therefore, give me all your documents, give me your money, give me your bank card, because I am you. Give it. Give me all your documents. Give me your documents, because I am you.
What you are talking about, that is ignorance that you are talking.
Exactly. Ignorance is thinking that we are this, that we become one. We never become one. We are individuals. We never become one. It's Krishna saying, not me. Krishna says it. The Bhagavad Purana says it, not me. It is Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva, inconceivably one and different. This is Lord Chaitanya's teachings. It is Krishna's teachings. Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva. It means we are one in quality. We are spiritual essence, but we remain individuals. And I will end with that. Rantarachana Bhagavatam Ki Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premande. Haribol Krishna.